All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Diamond Hands Daniel Amesbury, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Regarellia?
This is it. We're back.
We're back. You gotta guess who's back. You've got an orange sweatshirt on, and I love it.
I know.
And I'm not a huge orange guy, but we had a lot of people messaging me, why no orange?
Well, I know.
I made them.
I know the guy that manufactured them.
That was me.
Yeah, I know.
I literally, you know how long it took me to sew that thing together downstairs?
I know. Boys, sweatshop down there, just nasty.
They asked, and we brought it. And it looks good. You look good in orange. They always said, you know, you looked good in orange. Remember that orange suit you used to wear? You looked a bit like Lloyd Christmas in Dumb and Dumber, but I remember when you used to rock that to the rink.
You mean the purple one? Or
I'm
the
kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew you didn't wear an orange.
I was going to say,
Chris Mayer would love it. Our buddy Chris Mayer. He wants orange, everything.
He loves orange.
He wants straight orange. Skates, helmets, gloves. Just mess with you, Chris. He does want the helmets, though.
Jock straps.
Yeah. That's brutes. Debo already has them, so what are you worried about? He got on that Manscaped, boom, then the orange jock strap.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? Exactly. What have you been doing this week since I saw you?
Prepping for the pod.
I know you were. Great guest today. Can't wait.
Yep.
Talk to this gentleman. He's a little wild.
Baddest man in hockey.
Baddest man in hockey. That's what they say.
Coming off an 18 game suspy.
Oof. We'll find out a little bit more about that.
I want to hear him break down.
I want to hear a breakdown on this play. But first off, our boy Craig Berube was relieved of his duties, which I know he's our friend and everything, but I just don't understand it when you're rebuilding. Maybe there's more to it. I did text with him. He's doing fine. He's going to get back home in the next few days, so we'll catch up. But confusing to me, but, you know, we're not there every day, even though I basically talk to him every day. It shocked me.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. I don't know. You're in a rebuilding situation, either way, but you'll get paid.
Get hired to get fired, now.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, listen.
That's the nature of the business, and I know they're in a bit of a rebuild there, or a larger rebuild, but, I mean, it's still about winning, and, you know, the shelf life of an NHL coach is certainly not as long as Chief's been there. So,
right.
I think it's just part of the course, you know.
Yeah.
Just, change the look, new voice, try and shake things up. You know, it's certainly not anything Chief's done. I mean, he's got nothing but, you know, respect from all those players, and he's done a hell of a job from the minute he was there. I think it's just the way it goes, you know. It's just like, as soon as you're not winning consistently.
Well, let me ask you this. So you're not winning, but, and I'm not putting down Army, you know, Armstrong, the GM, but like, he wants to rebuild, and he wants, you know, he didn't go crazy trying to get guys in there or whatever. I don't think he did. I know they have cap issues as well, but I just don't understand it from that side of things, even if it wasn't Chief. Like, yeah. I mean, if they were, like, so bad, I mean, they're a game below 500, which is not where they want to be, but where did you want to be if you're rebuilding?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I hear you. I just think that the easy solution sometimes when you want to shuffle the deck is to, you know, to make a change, to show the league that you're making change internally. I think it's easy from a general manager's point of view to just gas the coach.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like it's always been a thing to do. And again, the shelf life of NHL coach is not like, you know, this is like NCAA collegiate hockey where the coach can kick around for 10, 12 years at a time. So it's just the way it goes. I think it just shows the public and around the league that they're trying to make a change.
It's funny, on the social media I saw it. I don't know if it was Twitter or Instagram, but there wasn't one person that I saw out of all the comments. I just went down for a little bit just to see what people were saying, maybe in St. Louis, and everyone was pissed off.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
who are you going to – I mean, it's like Chief's obviously proven to be an amazing coach.
Right.
I mean, it's like – to me, if you're in a rebuild, you want to build around a guy that's, you know, has a cup there, but, you know, has built teams that are highly competitive.
Yeah.
That being said, whether it's just like a PR piece, you know, it's just like, okay, we're really trying to make a change here and change courses, change the direction of the course here. I don't know, but
yeah,
it's really not what the Chief's done.
You know,
it's like
he may be ready for a change. You know,
maybe Army needs to fire himself.
Yeah, well, a lot of people were saying that. Yeah, it was kind of funny. I believe it. A lot of people were actually saying that,
he's building the team. So
yeah, I mean,
like,
you built the team, but you know, it is what, like you said, like. Chief used to, I remember him telling Johnny Stephens all the time, do things the way you want to do them.
Because you're going to get fired either way.
And would you rather get fired doing things the way you wanted to do them or the way you were being told to do them?
That's right.
And that's right. I thought that was pretty good advice back in the day, you know, for Johnny. And Chief knows, you know, he understands it, just like you said. So he'll be fine.
He'll be fine. He'll, he had a hell of a run there. He's going to pop up somewhere.
Yeah,
I mean, he is a legitimate NHL coach. Time will tell where he lands up, and you know, he'll be missed there. I'm sure all the players will be like a little pissed off that he's
I think that'll be a tough day there today.
It's tough to replace a guy like that.
A lot of people that don't know him, you know, don't understand what kind of a human he is and what he brings to the rink every day. Like, he was one of the few coaches, and like, if I'm a coach, you're going to be pissed off some nights, and you don't want to, but I'll tell you what, man, and I didn't have any coaches that I worked with over the 26 years that were ever, like, you could just tell you just stayed away from them.
Yeah.
If you lost a game or they were pissed, you just kind of stayed away. They were never rude to me or treat the staff bad, but Chief was one guy, he could flip everything over in the locker room and then come out and be like, all right, boys, to the staff, hey, you want to go have a beer and talk about how fucking bad we are,
exactly.
and you know, you feel like, oh, okay, he kind of, after the game, he let it go.
He's able to self-regulate and bring it back down to earth.
Wish you the best, Chief. I know I talked to you today, but
absolutely.
He'll bounce back. I'm not even worried about that.
Absolutely will.
Our Flyboys, great road trip. Played in Arizona, obviously, Colorado, really good team, obviously, and in Nashville, and come out with 5 out of 6 points. It's pretty damn good for a trip like that, coming off a bit of a heater. You know, guys been playing well, going to Arizona, and went 4-1, and they've been playing well. I believe Baller was calling them a wagon at one point. He was.
Not anymore.
Not now.
No.
But, no, they went and boys played well, won 4-1, and then they beat the Avs, the Avalanche, 5-2. That's a really big win. That's a tough place to play. Obviously, that team's very good, but I don't remember winning a whole lot of games in Colorado. I do remember over the years winning a couple, but they got a really good team, obviously. And then in Nashville, they fought back last night. They were down two rip, came back, tied it up, did lose in overtime. You still get that point, and it's a huge point. It could mean a lot down the line, obviously. So I'm imagining Torch would be happy with that trip.
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
I mean, boys are buzzing, man. You see those clips before the game in the locker room with Frosty's dad coming in.
That was cool.
Just to see the energy going on in the locker room, you could tell that it's translating on the ice. Like they look like a legit team.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they're finding ways to win. The energy there is there, and you know, I've talked to several people around the area, like they're exciting to watch.
They really
are. It's refreshing, and it's use the word exciting. It's beyond that. It's beyond what people expected this year. And, but that's the ingredient that they've been missing the last few, well, say 2 years at least, you know, just that heart and the excitement that they're bringing to the rink every day. So,
and we've talked about it, and you've been on teams like that. When you're winning, it's fun. Oh, and it's easier to work hard and outwork teams when you're winning.
Yep.
It starts, I mean, we went through a few, like we've talked about before, where I remember we lost 10 in a row, and it was like, the guys were playing their asses off, and it was just like little breaks here and there, and nothing was going our way. But they're making their breaks. They're playing hard. I mean, we've talked about it also. It's a tough way to play every game, but they're doing it, and they're having fun.
They are having
fun.
And
I hope it keeps going. I was actually texted with Brian Boucher yesterday, and I said, you got them going, Boosh. You got them going. He's like, oh, yeah, a little talk here and there. And, you know, but he said it's actually fun to watch. It's fun to broadcast. Because they play so hard.
Yeah.
And they're hard to play against.
They are, yeah. So they're pesky and, scoring some really nice goals, too. Like, you know,
high
compete goals. And they're skating, you know. They're just everything, you know.
They're kind of doing what you got to do to win.
Yeah, exactly. They're bringing it all together.
They're bringing it together. They're going to bring it down.
They're going to bring it down.
When you showed them the video and you broke it down.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Then they knew.
Yeah.
Got a question for you. Does the NHL have an issue with boarding calls or boarding penalties, how they're calling them?
I think boys just like to run guys from behind.
Well, you can't.
No, I mean, some of these, I mean, I think one out of the three was a legitimate, like, from behind boarding. But the other two we can get into discussion on. Because I think
that's what I was going to ask you about.
Questionable on both sides of the hit.
Right. So the first one I wanted to bring up was Evander Kane's. He hits Brodin. No penalty at all. What were your thoughts on that play? I know Ballo will probably put a clip up so people can see it, but
you know, I try to play both sides of the fence and just be honest on, like, if I was the guy receiving the check and the guy on the forward check, you know, being a reckless guy that I was, you know, wanting to crush guys, but also having some bit of a brain going in there, you know. That one and the Cousins hit were some bit similar. I mean, Brodin's looking over his left shoulder.
He sees him.
He sees him, obviously aware of a forechecker. And he goes back for the puck. He reverses up the left side, whatever he lands up doing with it. And then, you know, to me, you always got to put yourself in a position that you're not going to get hurt, right? It's like you have to protect yourself. But knowing that, first of all, you have a forechecker, and it's Evander Kane, who's probably going to finish it, right?
Oh, yeah. You know he's going
to either slow down to absorb it or just put yourself in a better position to receive it. I mean, a combination of the two. So that's the onus on the guy receiving the check. You know, if I'm Evander Kane and I see a situation like that, like that's, you know, especially knowing the way the game's gone the last, you know, several years and obviously protecting the players, not like it was back in the day where you just pulverize a guy in a bad position. I think he's got to ease up a little bit and see how this thing plays out.
Right.
You know, I watched it in slow-mo several times. I mean, I don't think it's a quote-unquote hit from behind. It's certainly different than, you know, the Eric Robinson hit where his back is clearly facing him. This guy's turning to go back. He's aware of the pressure. I don't know that it's a penalty. There's no penalty called.
Well, there wasn't one called.
I mean, you could definitely give him a 2 minute minor on that one. Just be like, just more aware, right?
Okay, yeah.
So maybe I'll change my stance on that. Maybe there's a 2 minute minor, you know, that needs to be assessed there.
Okay.
But I also believe, like, again, the guy receiving the hit, like, you got to be
We've talked about this.
Yeah, before. I mean, you got to put yourself in a situation that's safer, you know? Like,
Especially if you see the guy, right? Like, as a player, like, I can't on it, but he does do what you're supposed to do. He has a look.
Yep.
So I've seen all, you know, I've seen how many games. Usually a guy will kind of turn himself, and you know you got, you're going back to get that puck. You got balls, first of all, to go get it. Maybe try to protect yourself because or maybe he's thinking, well, I've got my back to him. He sees numbers. I'm not going to get hit, but I don't know if that's the way to think about it because obviously your guys are getting hit.
Yeah. Yeah, and guys are doing that as a defense mechanism. They're turning their backs
which
to the
I don't
play,
think
which
is smart.
I don't think that's smart at all. I mean, you know, the we'll get into it, like the Eric Robinson hit there on Justin Barron. Like, you know, he it's going like a D-to-D around the wall. His back is facing him. Like, he's just like...
He's already got a few strides away.
Yeah, and he's already in position like that. He didn't turn his back to defend himself.
Right.
It's a little different situation. Eric Robinson's got to stop. He can't run the guy over on that one.
And he got a five-minute major. I think that's a good call.
That's a good call, yeah.
Because he had strides to get there, and he's at the boards, numbers. Like.
Exactly. And that one's a little more clear-cut. These ones we're talking about with Evander Kane and Nick Cousins, like they're kind of similar plays, both going back,
right?
You know, on the one, Brodin's looking to the left, the other one, Gerbrandsen's looking to the right. But nonetheless, it's always about like awareness of the pressure and then putting yourself in a better situation where you're not so vulnerable for a hit, right? And
Gerbrandsen on the Cousins hit, he's a veteran. He's been around. I wonder if in his mind he... Maybe he doesn't know who it is, but if he sees his cousin's eye, he's not going to hit me. But still, even for a veteran player like Goody there, I feel like he didn't do a very good job of protecting himself.
I agree. He could have turned his shoulders, been a little more square. Because I mean,
he got
me,
low, too.
Cousy didn't go shoulder to mid-back and pulverize him from behind.
Right.
It was actually shoulder to shoulder. Just the way his shoulder went into the boards looked like it was from behind. You know, again... I would say the same thing on Cousy too. Like forechecking that hard on a on a guy that's going to be in a vulnerable situation, you might want to ease up and maybe get maybe like an 80% hit on it. Like you know, where it's a little safer. Because you got to play both sides of it. It's such a fast game. You know, the guys aren't going in there to hurt anybody. Like legitimately hurt them. You're going in to finish your check, but two very similar situations. So fast. But I think, again, onus on both guys. Knowing a guy is going to be putting himself in a vulnerable situation, you got to be a little more mindful.
Right.
But being the guys getting hit, like, remember what happened in the days where you push yourself up against the boards so the guy would almost bounce off you.
Right.
And or slowing the guy down on the forecheck and just kind of bracing yourself and going at the puck, scooping it out and making a play.
Right.
I remember there was a couple guys back in the day that used to put themselves in bad spots. I think Yoni Pekkanen might have been one of them, like 2 or 3 feet away from the boards going back for pucks. And guys are just crushing you and you're going, you know, you have that extra space to go into the boards, looks ugly.
Yes.
Or if you just went up against the boards, you absorb the hit and the guy might bounce off you. It's just a safer play. So, man, we could beat this one around all day long. To me, it's both sides of the fence. They're kind of like touch and go plays. You know, again, because, you know, obviously the NHL reviews these, and if there was a suspension warranted, they would have given them one.
Right.
So they're obviously on the side of the fence where it's not that bad. It just looks worse, you know, and game's fast, the game's physical. Again, you got to know where you're getting hit.
Yeah.
I mean, both guys shoulder checked. They knew.
Right.
The guys were coming.
Yeah.
But they also didn't know they're going to get absolutely... T-boned in sports either, but again, that's the game you're playing. I mean, awareness is a big part of this.
Yeah, we like you said, we've talked about that before, but I wanted to get your take on it because you obviously played the game.
How would you have played that out in men's league?
In men's league, well, you really think you're not going to get hit, so you can't. I don't know what I would have done, but I don't think I would have. I would have just gone and tried to circle around the net, I guess. But you're also not getting hit in mid-league.
Well, I know.
I know you're kidding.
What would you do if you were the forechecker? Would you just crush them?
Oh, right through the numbies.
Yeah. Right through the numbies.
No, strong it's a play. Last thing. I don't need to go 0-5-1.
Yeah.
Another play, I don't want to say it was funny, but Austin Watson just absolutely shoots a clapper at Jeremy Lozon. At the end of a 5-1 game, Bowler? Was it 5-1?
5-1, yeah.
What do you think of that? Any gloves getting dropped? after that.
I mean, that's one way to stir it up.
It is a way.
Get a line brawl going. I mean, you do something like that. Expect the bees to swarm for sure. I mean, it was just such a silly, unnecessary thing to do. You know, I mean, I understand you're frustrated.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like really.
God forbid that actually, could have been really bad. If he's not, doesn't see it or whatever, and he gets someone, I mean, that could be ugly.
Yeah.
It could be ugly either way, but.
I'm all for stirring things up and setting the tone, but like some things are just unnecessary and just like the downright stupid. Like I would put that in a category. I mean, he shoots that up higher. I mean, you blow out his balls.
Well, that's
face,
what, yeah, that's
you know,
what
who
I
knows
mean.
What, you know? And it's like, it could be a dangerous play. It's very, just like, very. So, it's just unnecessary, you know, but.
It's just unnecessary.
It's really not a hockey play.
Like me
play,
and Jakey when he got in trouble one time and he's. Sharius, relax, baby. That's unnecessary. He's so fucked. Another thing I wanted to ask you about with Dave Perron, cross-checked his Zub the other night.
I did.
He got a 6-game suspension.
Highly illegal.
It's frowned upon.
It's frowned upon. Unnecessary.
In any league, I want to say. But I think he sees Larkin's down. Yeah. I don't know if he even knows who did it.
Does he know what
but
happened?
But he flew off the handle a little bit.
Yeah. He went after the wrong guy, too. But I get what he was doing. You could have done this in a little bit more manageable way, you know, without cross-checking the guy in the face.
Yeah, six I think you're right speed. About that. A 6-gamer.
He was emotional.
Close
he was
to 150.
He was defending his, yeah, I know, right?
Gone.
Down the tube.
Down the tubesy. But, you know. Yeah, a little obviously very dangerous play when you bring your stick up like that. I like him as a player, though. I always have.
I know. It's not. It seems like it's out of character for him.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's ever had a suspension, so I think if he had before, if Zach Ronaldo did that, he got 15 games or maybe easy, more. But he's never – I don't think he's ever had any issues with the league.
Yeah.
It was pretty wild. Pretty wild. And I don't know if he meant to get that high, but he did.
Yeah, he did.
Either way,
It just looks bad, you know, because you're coming out of the woodworks and it's like you're retaliating too, right?
Right.
And you're looking for vengeance. But, yeah, it's not a safe play.
Not at all.
Highly frowned upon.
Highly frowned upon.
And unnecessary.
Pretty unnecessary.
Unless you're in the 70s.
Yeah, unless you're in the 70s, like you said.
Because that would just be a standard play.
My boy Patrick Kane got his first goal with Detroit. So that
he's
was
buzzing.
Cool
I saw
see.
some footage there. He was cruising through the neutral
first game
zone,
he had.
Speed.
Yeah, first game. Oh, he's feeling good.
He's looking good for that
major surgery there. It was cool to see him score. Also, one other quick thing. Our boy Knobber. He's pushing the buttons correctly right now. They've knocked off 8 in a row.
It's incredible.
In Edmonton, man. That's what you got to do to try to get yourself back in the playoff hunt there.
No kidding.
Even though we're only in December. But, they're rolling right now.
The Knobber-McDavid connection back.
Yeah.
Back and reunited.
It's back.
Obviously, the
chemistry's
back. I
heard they're playing Guess Who's Back in the locker room every day.
Knobber's back
with McDavid. So interesting week, man.
Yeah.
Interesting week.
A lot of action.
Yeah, a lot of action and nice to see for Knobber. I know we've talked about him a couple weeks in a row here.
All right, Nas, we're ready.
I'm definitely ready.
138, baddest man in hockey.
Diamond
it's
hands.
Not you.
Huh. I knew that.
No.
I was aware. I was aware.
05-1.
Yeah. Why you got to bring the recce up all the time?
I don't know. I just want to remind you. You're not the baddest man.
I'm not tough. I am a pussy. I get beat up a lot. I've been beat up a lot, but at least I stood in there.
And you're
and got shit kicked.
And get back up.
I don't want to do it again, though. Yeah. Too old.
We're ready.
40 almost. We're ready. Diamond hands.
All
let's
right, go. Let's
go. Daniel Amesbury. Santa, baby. The season for a fresh cut is finally here with the sponsors of today's show, our friends, Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming have just launched their fifth-generation lawnmower to help you avoid another silent night in the bedroom this year. They are talking to you, Riggedy Riley.
Oh.
You gotta trim it up. Take care of your special snowflake with Manscaped and watch your South Pole shine like never before. You know, the trimmer you are, the bigger it looks. Get the best stocking stuffer of all by going to manscaped.com and using code NASTY for 20% plus free shipping. Mrs. Claus will thank you.
Starting with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, this is the crown jewel of the holidays, and dare I say, the best ball trimmer of all time. The Electric Razor's advanced skin-safe technology is a lifesaver and known for reducing nicks and cuts on his Santa sack.
You need to protect the sack, Riggs.
Got to. Anybody in the family have too much scruff?
Yes, you do.
I do?
You do.
Look no further than Manscaped Beer Hedger, Pro Kit, and Handyman Electric Face Shaver for all his facial hair needs. Dad have nasty nose hairs? Save the day with the Weed Whacker 2.0 nose and ear hair trimmer.
Ladies and gentlemen, get 20% off and free shipping with the code NASTY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code NASTY. Say ho, ho, ho to a well-groomed mistletoe with Manscaped.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are super jacked to bring on a guy that just belongs on Nasty Knuckles.
Yes.
Young man from Maple Ridge, BC, Riggs. Mm-hmm. Plays this year and last year at Danbury for the Danbury Hattricks. We're going to talk about the minutes. But first, let's introduce our good buddy, Daniel Amesbury, better known as Diamond Hands. What's up, brother?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, man. So happy to have you, brother. We've been talking about this for a while. A lot of people asking for you as well, sending in messages. So we had to get you on, man. You guys remind me of each other. Kind of have to, we'll talk about that a little bit, but congratulations. Just had your first son.
It's my it's going to be my third son now, but
shit. My bad. Well, Hang on. It's your fourth kid because I saw a promotion you were doing when you were doing the rough around. You said there's two things you do, fucking fight. So obviously, bad. I apologize.
I had to run that promo by the wife before I sent it in. For sure.
I bet so. I apologize. I didn't realize you had other kids. Yeah. That's awesome, though. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's been good.
Oh man, that's great.
Yeah, I remember when I made that video, I was like, this is good for the brand. I show it to AJ. He's like, that's hilarious. He's like, you better show it to the old lady. She's like, I'm okay with it. It's good for the brand.
Yeah, there you go. That's awesome.
Oh man. Well, you mentioned that we reminded each other of each other, but I was thinking you're 33 years old right now and I retired at 28. I can't imagine. You had a hiatus of what, like 7-8 years, and then you come back and is it longer?
Nine years, I think it was. Yeah, 2014 I retired, and then last year is my first year back. I want to say it was nine.
Oh man, so,
jeez.
Yeah, it was a long break, and I mean it's weird because like, I mean I feel like that time off. I mean obviously I wasn't beating my body up as much as I would have been, so I'm probably in better. My body's probably better off than, how it would have been if I played the whole way through, obviously, but definitely still feel some of those bumps a little more than I did when I retired the first time there.
Oh man, I can't imagine. You probably got nine years of built up aggression too.
Staying dormant. I was actually, so when I first retired from hockey, I went back to Canada. I was playing senior A lacrosse. So I was, okay. That's kind of what kept me busy most of the time when I was back home up there in Canada. So I kept busy with that and then came down to Danbury. Kind of AJ convinced me to come out of retirement, and here I am.
He's good at that, eh? He's good at that.
Twist your rubber arm, eh? Come tilt.
Let's go. Yeah. So it's been fun, though. We won a championship last year. And then obviously me and AJ, all the stuff that I got going on right now with AJ doing the podcast, the Talking Trash podcast. And then we're doing, Rough and Rowdy with Barstool and like, just been a really fun journey, and I'm really happy that he was able to talk me into coming out here and going on another adventure. So
super cool. Did this all come up from the Ice Wars when you won the first and second Ice Wars?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Like, when I first, the first Ice Wars when I started training, like I was already going through this time in my life where I was really ready to just really jump in and try something and like swing for the fence and stuff like that. And I was already really feeling that way. And, And then the Ice Wars kind of thing came about. And then, you know, when I started training for that, I just got into this vibration. I just got into this state where I was like, I'm going to do something with this. I didn't know what it was yet. And then I won the first one, won the second one. And then, you know, as I got closer with AJ, we started talking, and then, you know, the opportunity came, and yeah, it just be kind of, it all kind of fell together, and it kind of just, it was divine in a sense. It happened, I feel like, the way it needed to. And I truly think, like, the way it all happened, it was like, I couldn't say no, because it was just too, it just, everything, the way everything fell into place. I was like, yeah, I feel like it's a sign. I got to do it. And I was ready to do it, and I had the support to do it. So, yeah, we just, we're on a little adventure here with the family. It's awesome.
That's super cool. It's awesome to see you embrace it the way you have. Yeah. You know, like, you're owning it, you're embodying it, right? I mean, as you should as a fighter, obviously. You can't be half-assing it, but it's like encouraging to see, you know, like, I'm not going to call you old because I'm 41, but, like, you know, an older guy to take a leap like that, where most guys would play it safe and be like, well, I'm done, you know, and, you know, and just kind of hang tight. But for you to come out of your shell and, you know, you're arguably, like, the baddest dude in hockey, and, you know, you're using your influence, and you're just doing a lot of good stuff, and,
yeah,
you know, you put yourself out there, and, you know, props to you for taking that leap.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, like, there is times where you think about it too. You're like, oh man, like, you know, I got kids, I got a family, like I got, obviously got to look out for them and make sure everything's good with them. But, you know, it was a conversation that we had, and it wasn't a calculated conversation. It was like, hey, look, I think this is an opportunity. And from where I see it going and what I see nowadays with, you know, I want to keep doing the boxing, I want to keep doing the hockey and building the following, building a brand, which, you know, in today's day and age, and I'm sure you guys see it, like, there's value in that. And mm-hmm. the value you can get out of that nowadays, it's, you can do anything with it, whether you start a company out, you know, I'm done playing hockey, I can't beat my body up anymore, maybe I start a supplement brand, or who knows what it is, but it's having that brand, there's value behind it. So it was a very calculated decision to make that leap and say we're going to do it. But it was the sacrifices that we made that I think is the reason that everything's kind of starting to get rolling now.
Yeah. Yeah, I see it. And yeah, and I can see how calculated it is, because you seem to be very strategic with, obviously, AJ. I mean, he's a promoter by nature, and Rough and Rowdy. And, like, there's obviously a lot of thought that goes into what you're doing. It's not just, like, randomly swinging for the fences here. Like, and it's going to continue to grow for you as you keep building your brand. You're putting out good content, and there's an appetite for it. So I'd like to think that it's going to continue to grow for you. I mean, I was saying to Nasty before, I'm like, man, you, like, maybe the next step for this guy is, like, WWE shit. This guy, like, you need to be, like, you know,
because I know AJ's involved.
Well, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I'm sure you talked to
him. You know, it's funny you say that, because, like, for me, that was, like, that's, like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, watching WWE and WWF. Well, it was WWF for me.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah, me too.
When I was a kid, man, watching that, it's like, oh my God, this would be the best thing ever. And, like, actually, like, it's funny, because my woman always tells me that. She's like, you should be a pro wrestler. Like, especially when I finally dove all in and went handlebars and mullet.
She's yeah.
She's like, you're already a pro wrestler now. Like, so, yeah, that would be awesome. I know AJ's got he's kind of in with NXT and stuff, but
yeah,
we're trying, you know, I'm really grateful to be with AJ and Jimmy even too. Like, those guys are such good influences on me, and they just, they are very calculated. And me and AJ are like yin and yang, because, you know, I don't know if you're, I'm sure you're probably maybe a little bit similar to me, Cote, is just, I'm crash and bang, I'll run through that door first. Like, you know, I don't really think, I'll do it tomorrow, you know, like, where AJ is very calculated. So I think I speed him up a little bit, he slows me down a little bit. It works out perfect for both of us, because, you know, I need that. I think maybe sometimes he needs it, and it just really works out well for us. So I think, I'm excited, and I'm really grateful to be able to be with the Galantes and be able to, you know, grow my brand and our brand together. It's really fun.
And it really is becoming a brand too, because just following you the last couple of years with all this, you see your followings getting bigger. And like I said, the team I work with now, in the NAHL, North American Hockey League, the the Philadelphia Rebels, we go to Danbury, and all our kids are always talking about you, especially Sonny Denuble. I know I mentioned that to you off air. We actually have, he's got a little thing now, and it says Diamond Hands on his, above his nameplate, his normal nameplate, but he loves you, and he's always talking about you. But I'll tell you one thing you can do is tell them to turn the heat up in that damn barn. It is the coldest barn I've ever been in, man. I have a couple friends that live there, and they go to all your games, and they actually drive in. I also have a shop because I did equipment for so long, and I do skates and equipment repair. And these guys drive in from Danbury like a couple times a month. Yeah. And I said, well, is it at least warm during the Fed games? Because I know it's packed because I watch the highlights. Yeah. I follow you, and I see all this stuff. And he goes, it's still cold in there. Yeah, okay. But it is cold barn, man.
So the other day, it's funny you say that because we were watching the game. I'm currently suspended, unfortunately. And I'm watching the game, and I'm freezing. I'm like, where am I going to sit? And I asked, like, because usually we sit in our one spot. I'm like, I thought it was colder. And I asked the other guys that weren't playing. I'm like, is there like a heater? Is there like, you know, some arenas they'll have like the top
yeah, right, the bar, right.
They'll have a little heater. They're like, no, there's no heater. I'm like, all right, well, it's it is chilly. What it is. I just have to buy a bigger jacket. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
You have to bring your own, maybe.
I prepare now. I'm fine. Yeah, I gotta. Oof. Last year, I just never forget. It was the first time I was there. I was so excited because of, you know, going back to the Netflix thing with AJ and his dad, watching that. I was so pumped to go in there, and I was following you, and I knew you were there. So I was like, so pumped. I'm like, maybe we'll see him, you know, like, but, anyway, some of these numbers we got to talk about here. Riley and I were looking at it because he's got some similar numbers, but we were looking back at, 413 PIMS 1 year and 37 games. I'm assuming you knew what you wanted to do at a young age. I'm guessing.
Yeah, so it's funny because, like, you know, when I was young, like, I feel like I just grew up around people that were kind of tough, like my friends' older brothers and stuff like that. But I loved it. Like, I loved getting, you know, my best friend's older brother, they'd beat us up. And I was the one kid that would come out laughing. Like, you know, some of these kids would be crying. I'd be laughing. Like, that was so much fun. And they always be like, man, you're crazy. Like, you know, and I always loved the rough stuff. And I really did when I was younger. I wanted to play football and I wanted to box. Like, I was just always very, you know, just very, I love contact and I loved, you know, that kind of stuff. And my parents never let me box, you know, probably what most parents wouldn't really want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I get that, you know, like, but at the end of the day, like when I finally got to, you know, I was trying out for the junior team, it was junior B at the time. And, you know, I was kind of a bubble player. Like I didn't play hockey. I wasn't a guy that went to camps, you know, I was hockey in the winter, baseball in the summer. Like I wasn't on the ice all the time. And, you know, I was just trying to make the team. And I ended up fighting in my first year of junior in tryouts. And I remember the assistant coach came running in, this big guy too. And he came running in. He was so stoked. I thought I was going to get in trouble. I literally thought I was going to get in trouble. I'm like, oh no, I fought. Cause coming right out of minor hockey, like AAA program, I'm thinking like every time I fight, I get in trouble. And he ends up being like, oh my God, we didn't know you could do that. That's awesome. Pretty much signs me right there. Oh, and wow. And then once I started getting the praise for it, like, oh my God, I fight. And everyone's like, it gets the guys pumped up. The coaches loved it. The fans loved it. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. This is the greatest thing ever. Cause I'm not getting in trouble. I always got in trouble when I fought, you know? So I really embraced it. And like, you know, the first couple of years, obviously I wasn't by any means the toughest. I was, you know, I'd take some licks and, you know, fight the middleweights, heavyweights every once in a while. And then I really embraced it and I really liked it. And, you know, I remember my last year, I was a captain of my team. And that was the point where I had to get my dad was starting to be like, hey, dude, like you need to be on the ice. Stop fighting. Coaches told me, whatever you do, don't fight. We need you on the ice. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, we had a rule. You fight in the last 10 minutes, you get an extra or whatever. So it'd be like 10:01, boom, Amesbury's dropping the gloves again. My coach has like got his hands on his head, like, are you kidding me? Just trying to get my reps in. But I really embraced it and I really loved that side of it. And I really think, like, just as much as like the, you know, being on the offense in a fight, like I like the scariness and the just overcoming that fear inside of myself. Like I really just, you know, I'm sure you can relate, Cote, like that feeling you get even before the game. It's like, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? Like, I don't get, like, I'm such an idiot. And then you get out there and then you drop the gloves and you're still thinking the same thing. And then finally you engage and you survive. You're like, oh my God, I'm alive. I made it. It feels so good. It's like, oh my God, like, wow, I made it through another one, you know? And it's just, it's something that I really enjoyed about overcoming that fear inside of myself. And yeah, it probably shows in my penalty minutes, I guess, but yeah. I really leaned into it. So, yeah, it's kind of continued here the last season. Yeah.
I was telling Riles, I was watching an interview with you, and it may have been you and AJ just talking, but, you said something really interesting, and it reminded me a lot of, Riley. He used to say, like, or he says that he basically got into character to do what you guys do. And you kind of said, you alluded to the same thing, is where you're an enforcer, you're there to take up for your teammates. So it kind of becomes a character that you are, because I watch, you know, I love when you're mic'd up a lot and I hear you like on the bench, someone hits one of your guys, you're always standing up saying something. He was unbelievable that way for his teammates. And I remember Riley, as I said, at a big function we had one time back in Delaware, as he was the, everyone said he was their best teammate they had ever known because of that. And you do the same thing for your team. So I just wanted to ask you about like getting into that character, because it kind of is. And we kind of talked about wrestling and stuff, but you have to get your mindset right, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it's difficult. Like, you know, there's the, you got to tote this line of like being a good human off the ice, obviously, which is who we naturally are. And then you get on the ice and you kind of got to go into this character like you're a wrestler or WWF. Like, I don't even know. It's almost, I would say it's even different, because it's like, it's real. Like, you got to go out there and you got to be tough, and you got to make sure everybody on your team knows that you're the guy that they can lean on and that you'll make sure everybody's safe. And I feel like it just naturally happens when you have that role. Like, you have to take on this responsibility, and that switch goes on when you're on the ice. And then as soon as you're off, you're able to turn it off and kind of relax and kick back a little bit. And it's, you know, I find it actually makes it easier to relax when you're off the ice, because you do gas off a little bit of stuff that might be built up, but it's very difficult. And I find it much more difficult in today's game than it was in my last stint of pro hockey, for sure. Because, you know, you can't hit guys as hard. Fans freak out if you're too crazy, or like, it's just like, you have to now tote this line even more so than before. So it's very difficult, and it's hard to find that line and stay on it without going over it. Cause time to time you do get the emotions come in, and you might do something that crosses that line. And then, you know, you got to deal with the effects of it, which is what I'm kind of going through right now with my suspension and stuff like that. So it's really difficult, but at the same time, it adds to the, you know, the draw to why I want to do it. That difficultness and that, just the struggle of, you know, finding that line. It's like, that's a part of the role. And it's just like being a goal scorer, how that's a special skill. Like, what we're doing on the other end, we're our specialty is this enforcer role. It's like, you know, and there's no coaches for it. You know, we're just doing it on our own. There's nobody teaching us how to do it. There's no like clinics you can go to or skills coaches, you know, that for what we're doing. We're kind of just figuring it out as we go and trying to find out how to tote that line. And it's difficult. I'd say it's more difficult now in today's game, but I mean, that's a part of what, you know, what I like about it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's got to be difficult in today's day and age, right? I mean, it's like they've almost, you know, eliminated the enforcer completely. And then you're not only still doing it, but you're, again, when I watch your clips, like, it does remind me of myself and some of the animals that I played against, because it was just like a different beast altogether, right? I mean, I'm looking at some of these clips of yours and you're calling guys out and like they're literally shit in their pants. Like, I mean, I'm just like looking at their eyes. I'm like, you know, like picking up quarters. Like they want
to look at you. Yeah.
It's just a different time in place for having a guy of like your caliber. I mean, with that aggression and that that much willingness to play, because there's not many guys, certainly not around NHL, American leagues, very few, you know, like it's just like, it's kind of phased out. So, it's a different beast altogether, and to see you doing it, coming back at 33 or 32 when you came back last year, and not just coming back and doing it, but like
Yeah, like, doing it well.
Doing it on a, you know, on a grand scale.
Yeah.
And then something else I want to mention, you mentioned like the fear bodies associated with like the overcoming as you fight. Like I could connect with that fully. Like I know exactly what you're talking about, because that was like what drove me. It was like this, like every fight, every, whether I won or lost, like you said, I got out of this thing alive. I'm here. I'm grateful. And that was exhilarating. Like, am I ass beat or not? You know, it's like, let's do it again, you know? And then there's always like this like new fear body that's being kind of addressed, and confidence on the other side. It's like, say, superpower of some sort, right? It just keeps fueling you. So I want to mention that. Yeah. I can connect with that.
I think like also like, man, like the just the lessons, I feel like a lot of this fighting that I've been able to do over the years has contributed so much to stuff too, like in my day-to-day life, and like why, like, I feel like I don't think there's anything on the planet that can get me into my flow state more than a fight. Like I'm lining up with this guy and I'm like knowing like there's no distractions. Like when I'm fighting, it's just me and this guy. There's nobody else exists. And it's just such a cool thing. And I wonder sometimes if that's what kind of brought me into my spiritual side. Cause I'm like, I feel like getting in that flow state is so important for me outside of hockey. And I wonder if maybe that's just cause I've gone into it so many times into that, in those fights. I don't know, but I really, really, I enjoy it. And leaning into the character side of it's fun for me. It's really cool now being able to share it, because people are now seeing like how the role really is and how much more there is to it than just going out and fighting. Like, you know, if you can keep everybody on the ice looking over their shoulders, like, where is this animal?
Yeah.
And that's going to take a little bit away from them scoring goals, or a little bit away from them, you know, doing what they're trying to do. They're looking over their shoulder, worrying about what I'm doing or where I'm at. And, you know, I've been there. Like, the thing is, I think that makes it probably even more hard for some of the kids I'm playing against is that, like, they didn't grow up playing against this. Like, the new generations didn't have this.
100%. There's not,
you don't see guys running around in junior doing this. Like, when I was in junior, I wasn't the guy doing this. There was guys on other teams that scared the shit out of me, and I would have to fight them, or I'd have to answer the bell. And I remember we'd go into Alder Grove. It was always Alder Grove. And I remember being in the dressing room, like, knowing I'm going to go out there. They had three animals that were actually good players too, but, you know, knowing these guys will fight anybody in the league, and they're going to bark at me all game and tell me they're going to take my head off. And I'd go there. I was playing D. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to get the puck out, keep the game simple. Cause if I try and do anything extra, I'm going to screw up. Cause I know I'm worried about this guy taking my head off, right? You know? And it's just such an added effect. Whereas nowadays, I think a lot of these kids have never played with it. They come into pro and they run into a guy like me and they're just like, they don't even know what to do. And sure. I think like we've seen it last year, it was a very big tool for us, because, you know, especially when we got into playoffs, like some of these guys just, they didn't know how to handle it. Like, I remember I got scratched my first two games in the finals. We lost the first two, and then they put me in the lineup. I didn't even play a shift, and we won the next two games. So it was like, or the next three games, we won the three. I didn't play the first two, and then they put me in and for the last three, and I was playing like crap because I just came off a suspension. So I didn't even play any shifts, barely, like a couple shifts a period, maybe a shift or two a period for the last three games, but we won. And I believe a big part of that was these guys are worried about me sitting on the bench.
Yep.
You know? Yeah, totally. So,
and it's, you know, not to take anything away from our team, because we had an amazing team, but it just shows you sometimes, like, you know, when the other team doesn't have to worry about one guy like that, they all play a little bit bigger. And, you know, sometimes our guys maybe won't play as big, right? So it's really cool energetically what a guy like us can do, and what a role like that can really do. And I mean, the Broad Street Bullies, that's a perfect example. They paved the way. They showed everybody, holy shit, this is a thing. Like, this is actually, you know, this is a style of play that can beat, you can beat a skilled team with just intimidation, fear, and toughness. And obviously you need to have skill as well, but it was like, that was kind of one of the things probably where people are like, oh my God. And you don't see it as much now, but I feel like it's even more effective in today's game. If you can find that line and not cross it, I think it's more effective.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, I've always been a believer of accountability and the influence of accountability on someone's behavior, right? I mean, you're saying everything that I believe in. Obviously the Broad Street Bullies, right? It was obviously a different era, but nonetheless, you know, a little bit of chest puffing and flexing and obviously backing it up, how much that influences someone's behavior. So I still see a role in hockey with fighting. I know it's never going to be the way it was, but everything you're saying is the argument of why fighting should stay in the game. Yeah. Is that it's a legitimate strategy. It does keep people accountable. It keeps people honest. Guys on your team play bigger. On other teams will play smaller when you're in the lineup. I mean, I could speak for myself playing Pittsburgh Penguins, George the Rock's not in the lineup. Well, I'm going to act like bigger Donkey Kong than I normally would have, you know, because I don't have to fight him, you know, but I was willing to fight him. So it's just the psychology of knowing that you can absolutely have it your way. No one's going to do anything or say anything because there's no one there to keep you accountable. And, you know, we've seen this over and over again. I also wanted to mention, you said something super interesting around the flow state of fighting and how, you know, I understand what you're talking about, the flow state. It's just you and the other guy and nothing else matters. No one else matters in that moment, essentially a version of meditation, flow state. And then you said it's helped your spiritual practice, which I find super interesting because I never really found my spiritual practice until I retired, you know, in 2010. Can you maybe dig into that a little bit and what you mean by that? Because I think it's a profound statement because most people don't think of like fighting and the word spirituality, you know, in the same sentence or context. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think like, you know, I was kind of the same thing. I didn't really find my spirituality, or I didn't really go deep into it until I was retired and I had some years away from the game. But over the years of like talking to people, especially when you don't have the game anymore and you go through that period, which everyone who's ever played a pro sport or had a group of guys around them for a long period of time and then that's gone, knows that adjustment and how difficult it is into the real world. I feel like that finding that flow state that I feel like that connection that I got through fighting helped me so much when I started to get into meditations and I was doing, you know, plant medicines and stuff and ceremony work. And I found like, wow, once I actually learned how to drop in and meditate, I found like, oh my God, this is so similar. The feeling was so similar without maybe the adrenaline of a fight. But I felt like the state of mind and the calmness I could find was so similar. And I give credit to all the fighting that I've done. And I really think that it has something to do with it because, you know, I feel like I have a pretty deep connection spiritually now. And I, like I said, I know that not everybody has that, but obviously that's to do with the journey. But I feel like a lot of it does come from that, you know, that flow state that I found. I was able to find it so often through, you know, obviously you get it in the game of hockey. You get that flow state. You know, if you have life problems and stuff, I think everybody, I know, I remember as a kid, you know, maybe I had a bad report card. My dad's driving me to the rink and I'm like shitting myself the whole way. And then as soon as you get on the ice, you kind of forget about it.
Exactly.
You know, you're kind of able to take a breath and release. Well, I feel like the fight even got to me to drop in a little bit farther, even farther, you know, And I do think that it has a big connection with why I was able to find my vibe spiritually and my connection spiritually and going into these, you know, plant medicine ceremonies and meditation work and stuff like that. When I first started going to them, once I found that connection where I was like, man, this really feels like how I feel when I fight, it made it a lot easier for me to do it and believe in it and understand it, because sometimes when you go to those, especially when you're doing like group stuff, it kind of feels a little weird. It doesn't seem that, you know, it seems a little awkward. You're kind of like, oh, what are we doing here? We're all just going to, you know, sit and be quiet and or whatever it is. But I found once I connected the two, I was like, man, I think I really love it. And to this day, it's a really big part of my life. So
yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Well, we talked, on Instagram there a little bit before this about some of the stuff and the peaceful warrior, right? I mean, I can totally relate to what you're saying. It's really the flow state, the presence, right? It's like you can be present, obviously, in a creative sport like hockey, but you can also flake out easily, right? If like you don't have the puck or you're in practice and you're looking around or whatever, when you're fighting, there's nothing else to think about, you know, like you can't be flaking out. You mean get your ass whooped, obviously. So I can understand that next level of presence that you're talking about. Looking back, it's probably what I was attracted to now, knowing, you know, having a meditation practice and knowing this, it's pretty interesting to hear you talk about that. So we should probably connect after this on some of the stuff, because I think it's beautiful that you're a current guy doing this, you know, being the ultimate warrior, and then you know, still speaking, you know, speaking publicly about, you know, meditation and the plant medicine work, which is you know, a huge part of the healing work that needs to be done here. So props.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people too, like we've talked about it in the past, and it's like, I mean, you know, guys like us generally, you know, it's probably more common run into problems after retirement and stuff like that, even any pro athletes or whatever. But I find the fighters obviously have even more added, you know, dynamic, because guys get hit in the head and all this stuff, and just the taxing that we're doing on our bodies and stuff like that. But you know, like it's a pretty cool, you know, once you start to get into that sort of circle, it's pretty cool how the world gets really small and the community gets really small and everyone's kind of connected. And I feel like we have some of those connections through, you know, just the game of hockey and ceremony work and stuff like that, which is super rad.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. You've done Riley's done a ton of work, obviously, with that as well. So that's,
well, I think
really
you're
cool.
Putting yourself in a position too, because you're a current guy, right? I mean, you're a current guy and you're putting yourself out there. You could do it, you know. I think it's always about like the vehicle and how you can be of service, right? And I think you're kind of building that, you know, in real time, and, you know, being mindful of how many people you can influence, because it's not just about the fights, right? That's the entertainment, that's like the draw or the catch. But you're much more than that, right? You're not just selling fights. Like you're selling, you know, I think that's super important for people to understand. So I'm really, really glad that you brought this up, because I think it adds another dimension to what true warriorship is. It's not just, you know, it's like, yeah, we'll be there to defend ourselves and our homes and our families. But like, it's beyond that, right? It's trying to help be a ripple in this world and make change and help people out along the way. Because God knows there's a lot of people struggling out there.
Yeah. And you know what, honestly, the one thing that I find difficult, and I'm sure you've had it in the past too, is like, you know, we tote this line and we're, you know, it's like we're warrior in a garden, and then you're off the ice, you're able to be, you know, so calm and so relaxed and find this flow state. And then on the ice, you got to turn this switch on and you got to play mean and you got to fight. And then you got the fans and all these people that only see the one side. And it's like, man, at the end of the day, like, I understand, like, I never judge any fan or anybody for obviously judging a book by its cover. This is what you see. And especially if you do cross that line at times, people see it and they're like, oh my God, this guy is such a POS, or this guy is just a bad human. And it's like, for me, it's like, oh my God, I wish. This is why it's cool for me to be able to talk on podcasts and be able to share who I am and build a brand. Cause it's like, at least now people can see really who I am. It's like, I have to turn this switch on when I'm on the ice and I have to turn it off when I get off. But it's like, to the disconnection there for somebody to not see the whole picture and just see us when we're on the ice barking at people. It's like, you can only imagine this person's got to be a scary, mean person. That's just who they are. You know what I mean? So it's for me, like, a very important aspect of what I'm doing is I want people to understand there's yin and yang, there's good and evil, there's dark and there's light. And we all have to be in touch with both sides of it. Like, you can't just be one or the other. You can't, you know, being in touch with the dark side is a good, healthy thing. And it's good to know it's there and it's capable of being used if you need it in a situation, but you're really working from the light, you know, and being able to tote that line and show people that, like, that's what I want to do. Like, at the end of the day, like, my goal is to show people that, you know, this is how the role is, this is who I am. But, you know, if you're seeing one side or the other, you would never imagine. People that know me in my personal life that don't know like what I've done on the ice, obviously they've seen it. Now I'm starting to build the social media. They can't imagine when I first tell them, like I was coaching my, my daughter's T-ball this year and nobody knew I played hockey, right? Like it was a couple towns over and, we're coaching these little kids. They're all 3 and 4 years old. And then, as time goes on, we became close to this one family and I tell them, yeah, I play hockey. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they come to a game and they're like, we did not explain that. They couldn't believe it. I'm barking at guys. I'm fighting. And they're like, they were just like so caught off guard. They're like, oh my God. Like we had no idea, no idea. And I was just, and it's kind of funny because it's for me, it's like, it's normal for me, but for other people, they're like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like you're coaching a T-ball team on Sunday morning and then you're coming Sunday night and you're growling at people trying to fight everybody on the other team, telling the whole bench you'll fight anybody. It's like, what, like how do you do that?
I was telling Riley, I see all your clips and stuff, and what really made me laugh, because it was you being yourself, and it reminded me of Riley as well. You were standing up barking at a guy. I don't know what had happened, but you're like, I'm coming, you better be ready, I'm coming out. And there's another one of your teammates beside you going, I'm coming too. And then you go, we're all coming after you. And I said, that's fucking great. We're all going to kill you. I was dying. But it reminded me of him on the bench.
Yeah.
It was like a real Hansen Brothers moment there.
Right.
One of my favorite clips. That's going to be all time, I think, that one.
Yeah. We're all coming. I was going to say, I heard you tell a story too, and I want you to tell it because I'm not sure if Riley heard it, but you're talking about you come to Danbury, your very first game, and you clean a guy's clock. If you wouldn't mind telling that story, it's pretty common. Yeah. It's about the fans. He hears these fans, but go ahead. Sorry.
So AJ calls it my baptism to Danbury hockey. So he goes, make sure you got to tell them about your baptism to Danbury hockey. So basically what happened, I know, like, from my experience, the thing that I learned when I first started playing pro hockey was come into a league at the beginning, make a very clear statement, play a very hard, like, a little more aggressive than you would throughout the year, but come out hard, whatever that entails, it entails. But at the end of the day, everybody hears about it, and then, you got everybody right where you want them, essentially. So I knew I'm coming out of retirement. Guys are going to think, I'm just an older guy. I don't still got the fire, this and that. So I'm like, okay, I gotta make a statement here and play really hard. And I think we were up, we were beating this team. We were up a couple goals and there was 8 seconds left in the game. Puck goes D to D. I'm swinging across the blue line. Puck goes D to D. And the guy just makes a pass up the zone and just admires his pass. And I'm like, screw it. I'm going to lay this guy out. Crushed him. Like, it was a good clean check right in front of the ref. No penalty on the play, nothing, just a big hit. And he must have launched 6 or 7 feet right into the boards. And he's just laying there, just not even moving. And I'm like, oh my God. So I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I'm literally at the point now where I'm kind of freaking out. I'm like, okay, this isn't very good. Like, the guy's still laying there. People are coming out. Now they're all the trainers are on the ice. I'm on one knee. I was like, okay, maybe I should just say a little prayer to the universe here and try and send this guy some strength. I'm on one knee. All of a sudden I hear the crowd, section 102, start chanting, body bag, body bag, body bag. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, where am I? The guy's dead. He hasn't gone off the ice. I'm like, move your arm, move your leg. I'm sitting there. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, to hear him chanting body bag like that, and the guy is laying on the ice and he ended up getting up. He was good, but he was recovered and stuff. He was fine, but it was a big check. And that was my intro to Danbury hockey and kind of, the beginning of it for me. I actually ended up the ref was right in front of it. No, he said no penalty. I talked to him after the game. No, it was a clean check, no penalty. And then a couple days later, just how hockey is now, they end up giving me a suspension just because it was too big. So that was the beginning of my interactions with the league board of whatever. And it's just continued to grow now from there. I had two that hit. And then I was suspended. I got one game suspension. Then I was back the following Friday, and I laid another guy out at center ice. It was a massive, and like I said, in the Central League days or old NHL days, it's a 100% clean check. But nowadays, you gotta play the puck. If the puck's there, you gotta at least poke check it, or you gotta let the guy know he's coming so he looks at you. You can't catch a guy that's not looking now. It's hard because I'm coming out of a time machine.
I played 10 years ago. I'm coming out of a time machine.
I'm playing hockey. These are my first two games in. So then, boom, I lay this guy out. Now eight games. That was an 8-game suspension. My first two games in Danbury, I got a 1-gamer, and then I came back, got an 8-gamer, and then I'm currently serving an 18-gamer.
Wow. That's a definition of old school meeting new school. Hey, like you're coming out of the woodworks. Like these guys have no idea
I'm coming out of a time machine here. I didn't play for all these years. And I said to my coach is like, hey, like you got to just, you know, like you can't hit like that anymore. This and that. I'm like, hey, I get it. But just like, make sure the league knows, like I'm coming. I'm trying to learn here. Like, this is like brand new for me. I can't hit a guy with his head down. Like I've never heard of that. Somebody cuts through the neutral zone with their head. Look, if they're looking at their skates, you can't hit them. It's like, it's weird, you know? And then, you know, I feel like nowadays we're running into a time. My last hit was I was on a back check. This is the one I got my 18 gamer for. And the guy turns his back. Like it was shoulder to shoulder when I connected with him. And then as he's turning, he kind of puts his stick up. So then my arms come up and he turns his head and his head goes right into the glass. Like he turns right in. Oh. He turns his shoulder. He was shoulder to shoulder with me at the beginning of our contact. And then he turns and just his head goes right into the glass. And then, you know, they're like, oh, well, it's Amesbury. And they had this weird, I don't even know what their rule was, but they based it on, oh, it was 12 or 11 months since my last hit that I was just telling you about. So they started at my last suspension and then did some, oh, we got to add 50%. Now they got 18 games somehow for this suspension. So I'm out till February, I think now.
Wow.
Jesus, February. That's my God.
So, you're seeing it now in the NHL. You're seeing it at every level. Like guys are getting absolutely obliterated and it always seems to be the young guys getting hit by the old guys.
Yeah.
And maybe not always, but it, you know, a lot of guys put themselves in vulnerable spots these days. Like it's not uncommon for a D man to make a pass and then they turn their head toward, they expose their back as they're getting hit. And a lot of times it's fine. Like a lot of times it doesn't lead to any issues. It's just, maybe they don't get a big enough of, or as big of a piece of you, but sometimes it ends bad because these guys turn their back and then their head goes into the glass. And now you got a guy that's getting fined and suspended and you got a guy that's hurt. So,
right.
You know, we talked about it on our podcast and it's, you know, you're in this weird time where it's like, well, we're still allowed to hit, but a lot of guys aren't really getting hit as much in juniors and stuff. So then they get into the pro level and they're playing against a guy that grew up playing juniors 10 years ago. Well, they're finishing their checks. They're hitting hard. And you know, it's kind of a dangerous time, honestly.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
I was going to ask you, I've been following you for a while. Do you have a hard time finding willing combatants in the league, or is it, or there, does most teams have a guy that has to answer?
I mean, most teams usually have a guy. There's a couple teams that don't, but like, honestly, like this year, I got jumped. Like my first, I think I've only had a few fights this year, but my first two fights this year, I got jumped. So it was like, you know, guys are willing. It is kind of hard sometimes. Like it's definitely tough to find someone that's going to square up with me and take our helmets off and stuff. But there's only probably like a handful of guys in the league that'll square up and go to center with me and take helmets off and whatnot. But you know, like it is a tough league. Like there is some guys floating around, but I mean, like I said, I've been jumped twice this year by guys, you know, I'll lay out a big guy, a big hit or something. And then someone will jump me right away, which I have nothing but respect when that happens, because you know, anybody that stands up for their teammate, I respect any day of the week.
Yeah. I've seen one of them, at least one of those two that you're talking about. And you absolutely dusted the guy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
You're right. Is it
right in front of the bench here, I think.
Yeah, right in front of their bench. Yeah, I think that was my first or second one this year. Yeah.
Like, what's he doing? But like you said, he came in to defend a guy. Yeah. So,
props.
Yeah.
But he probably thought, twice about it.
It was actually interesting when I saw that. You didn't look like you. It didn't even look like you like wanted to fight at first. You're like, what are you? Or you either like, what are you doing? Or like,
I was a little bit confused.
Yeah,
yeah, I was a little bit caught off guard because I'm like, what, you want to fight? Like, are you trying to fight? And he's like, yeah, let's go. I'm like, all right, well, but you know, like there is. You know, like there's a thing too, like where I wanna try myself against like other guys too. Like I feel like this league, I've obviously kind of gone through everybody in the league, and it's like, you know, I love being in Danbury. I want to stay in Danbury, but there's also an itch that I have too, where I'm like, man, maybe I should just move up. Maybe I should go to the next level. Maybe I should, you know, try and run into some of the bigger and stronger guys. Cause I know there's guys out there in the East Coast League and stuff like that that would probably give me a pretty good go too. But so who knows where next year's will bring? But but yeah, that's something kind of in the back of my mind now at this point too.
Well, I had another question real quick. I appreciate your time, by the way, man. You won the Ice Wars King of the Rink twice. Is there any different thinking going into that? Because this is more obviously staged. It's not like, oh, a guy hit my guy and pissed off. We've talked about that too. Like it's probably easier to get in a fight in hockey when you're just pissed off and you grab a guy and you guys both go. Yes. But as boxing, getting into the ring, is it a different thought process for you the night before or before you do it?
Yeah, I think it's a little more difficult because it's like harder to like in hockey, you're already like emotionally in the game and you're able to just, okay, you just turn it on. It's just like an added level of intensity. You know, the intensity's kind of already there. So it kind of hides your anxieties a little bit. I find like the boxing and the ice wars and stuff like that, like organized like events like that. It's definitely like an added anxiety a little bit more because it's just like that's all you're doing. You know, like everybody's training just for it. Everybody's coming in a little bit more prepared. And then there's the added part of it. Like, I mean, ice wars we were doing, I think I did 3 1-minute rounds. So like, if you think about it, what is that really? That's like 6 hockey fights or maybe even more, you know what I mean? Hockey fights are like what, 30 seconds on average, maybe even less on average. So it's like, you know, you're fighting a guy 6 times pretty much in a row. So it's like, there's that too, cause you're getting tired and you're getting hit. But I think there's definitely more anxiety. Like the ice wars, there was a tournament too. So you fought numerous times in one night. So that was probably the most intense thing I've done was just the tournament, the first one, the tournament. But even the boxing, you know, there's lots of anxieties with the boxing and stuff like that too. And yeah, I think definitely feels a little bit more intense going into that. But I mean, at the same time, when you know you got a heavyweight on the other team, like, you know, you kind of get the same feelings the night before sometimes, you know? So I'll be going through YouTube videos, and if I know there's like a big knockout, I'll just skip that one and watch the next one.
Yeah, right.
If I'm studying video, yeah.
Well, I saw you say too, you've had like 6 or 7 times where you had your nose broken. Riggs, you had yours popped a few times.
Oh, just a few, yeah. Yeah. Probably a few undiagnosed. They could probably use another surgery or two to straighten this bad boy out. I like to breathe out of my right nostril.
It feels good when you get it finally fixed up. Oh my gosh.
But, you breathe again.
Yeah. Yeah. I got the jello nose now. But
oh, yeah.
It's pretty. It goes down.
Look at that.
There you go. That's like the
that's like grass. Josh Gratton. I don't know if you know who Josh is, but his is the same way.
Yeah. No cartilage left.
Oh, yeah, there's not much in there. It's kind of nice.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying it's kind of nice now, though.
Oh yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's nice and straight. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Maybe.
You know, I can just get a good punch there, and I don't really it doesn't break anything.
Yeah,
it's like Josh. It's like grass.
I have a picture of my buddy punching me, and his knuckles just completely squishing my nose. It's like the best picture ever. Yeah, I got it up on my it's on my fridge at home.
That's awesome.
Maybe I should have broke my nose a few times.
Yeah,
a little cushion there. I was going to say, how did you get roped into the Ice Wars? Was that something that you saw marketed and then you're like, man, I'm signing up for this? Or did someone reach out to you right out of the gate?
Me and my friends always joked about it. Like since I was in junior, like, oh man, like if only there was like just a hockey fighting sport, you know? Cause it was like this weird niche skill. Like obviously it's for something, but it was like something that I loved and something I actually like, I wasn't just like fighting in hockey. Like I was trying to get better at it. I was like going and grappling and I was going and boxing. I was like trying to do things and trying to find ways to be better, studying fighters and learning different styles. So it was like, I really always took it so seriously and I wanted to see, like, it was just a thing me and my buddies always talked about. So AJ posted something online on the Trashers page, and my buddy, who we used to always talk about it with, sent it to me right away. He's like, dude, as if this is actually happening. And then I messaged AJ right away, just started hounding him. Like, I've gone back into our messages. You can see if I go all the way up to the very start, it's probably like 20 unread messages, me to him, sending him links to my hockey fights, lacrosse fights, everything. And I'm just like, hey man, like, these are the guys I fought, you know, I'll fight anybody, any weight class, don't care. And he's just like, he said finally he had to, he's like, okay, well, you were just kept buzzing me. Yeah. Finally I looked into you, and yeah, that's what it was, man. I as soon as I heard about it, I was like, I have to be in this. Like, that's nobody, so cool. nobody came and found me. I was hunting them down and trying to make sure I was a part of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Me and AJ actually just announced, it's going to be coming out on Sunday, but we have a big announcement coming up on our show on Sunday, and it's something related to the fights. So,
oh, nice. Awesome. Nice.
That's so awesome. Cool. What a great story. They talk about resilience.
Hey? Yeah,
that's
no
like,
shit.
Anybody listening, it's like, yeah. you gotta beat the doors down. You know, opportunities don't just, you know, come delivered in your doorstep.
I got a quick question too about your team in Danbury. Do you guys, this might be a dumb question, do you guys like practice daily? Are you guys at the rink daily, or is it the guys have? Oh, yeah. You are. Okay.
Yeah, we're on the ice every day. So it's like, you know, it's minor pro. So like, you know, there is obviously like senior hockey levels, which is probably like where the guys are working Monday to Friday, and then they practice like once a week kind of thing. But we practice every morning, so we're on the ice every day at 10 a.m. You know, Monday through Thursday, morning skate on Friday, and then we play usually every Friday, Saturday.
Right.
It's pretty much our thing. So we got some guys that work too after that. They'll go work, get some hours in and stuff too. For me, I just train people at the gym, do like strength and conditioning and stuff like that. But yeah, man, it's full time. So we're on the ice every day, which is good. Like, I feel like I need, as much as my body doesn't really feel like it appreciates it. Like, if I take 1 week off or 1 day off or whatever, you go out there and you feel like you haven't played in years. So when you're on the ice every day, it definitely helps the game and stuff like that big time.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you got an 18 game suspension here, so you probably need to get just to stay in shape. If you need a sparring partner, if you need a sparring partner,
not
I got
me.
A guy.
I mean, 99 Jim Kite, real quick. Oh, yeah. I'll be sleeping.
So I don't know. They give me these 18 game suspensions. The problem is, I just come back tougher because now I have all this time to box and grapple. I have all these open weekends now. I'm boxing, grappling. I'm on the ice. Like, it's just like, man, I'm gonna come back way tougher. Every time they give me a suspension like this, I'm like, all right, well, I guess it's boxing season again. Like, it's hard. It's hard to box during the season when we're on the ice every day. But you know what it's like. It's like your body is just, you're barely healing enough to get on the ice the next time, and then you got to play on the weekend. So for me, it's kind of, you know, obviously I want to play. I want to be there going to the war with the boys, but I just take advantage of everything right now. I know I have a limited window, you know, at my age, I don't have a ton of time to do what I want to do, especially with what I'm doing. I'm fighting on the ice, off the ice, boxing and stuff like that. So it's like, I know my window is small, so I'm taking advantage of this, and it kind of is, I'm just grateful for everything that happens to me. So in this situation, I'm grateful. I get to box on the weekends. I get to sharpen the tool a little bit. I get some sparring in on Sundays, and you know, that's what it's going to be till February, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. It's wild, man. Like, it's so cool though. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. I locked in. AJ just messaged me today. It sounds like I'll be fighting at the end of January, Barstool Rough and Rowdy in Providence, Rhode Island as well.
Oh, no way. Sweet. Okay.
Maybe we have to make a track.
Yeah, we might have to go to that.
Definitely. That would be awesome.
I was gonna say too, your ring attire was top notch, bro. Like the pay, you know, man, the jersey had the sparkles.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was as my daughters would say, bedazzled. But it looked sick in your trunks too, man. You brought the whole thing.
It's fun, man. Like, that's, you know, that's another part of it that's fun for us. Like, AJ's the man when it comes to that stuff. Like, he had, those are the jerseys that they wore. Like, those are the original jerseys, which is so rad, man. Like, I think that might have been Jimmy's. I think that was Jimmy's idea, I'm pretty sure, to have the sparkle. I think that's what he was saying. But, man, it looks really good. It's hilarious. And so, that went good with the style. I had the glasses on and the shirts and stuff. AJ designed the trunks, so I'm excited. I think we're gonna have to design some new trunks for this fight. So
super cool.
That was like one of the fastest knockouts, I guess, in rough and rowdy. That dude was sleeping quickly.
So it was like 12 seconds, and it was, you know, the guy's such a good dude, but it was like when we first found out, AJ calls me into the gym. He's like, "Hey, you gotta come down here. I know who you're fighting now." Like, because it's, you don't know, like with, especially with boxing, it's not like you get to pick. You know, especially like these levels, it's just like they're just gonna give you who they give you, and you find out, and you're like, you can either say no or you fight. It's either you don't fight or you do. This is your guy. So I show up at the gym, and you know, AJ's like, "Hey, this is the guy you're fighting." And AJ kind of like had his head down. He's like, "I think we might go to jail for this one," because he's like, "I don't know." Because but you know, this Abel guy had like 5 fights in Rough and Rowdy, and the promoter was like, "Are you sure?" Like, because I have zero box. I never boxed before. I'm just a hockey fighter. So it was like, you know, it was kind of like, this guy's got experience. I got zero fights. They were asking me if I was sure I wanted to do it. I'm like, "Dude, I'll fight anybody. I don't care. I'll do it." And then AJ's like, "All right, yeah, we'll do it." And like, "Are you sure he wants to do it?" They're like, "Yeah, he definitely wants to." I'm like, "All right." And then I think he, and it's classic for me. I'm just like a hockey fighter. I come in, my hands are down. I get tagged right away. And all of a sudden I'm like, "Okay, I'm in a fight." And then I go
and then Molly whopped him. Yeah. Like a flurry of like 10 in a row.
It was a flurry.
You could hear Wit was there too.
I
dropped him right onto him and Portnoy's lap. Like the guy's head was like right in front of him. Yeah.
Right when you walked in, Witter said something too. He goes, "This guy's legit, boys." Yeah. He took the jersey out. He's like, and I know Witter pretty well. I had him as a player with Team USA a couple times. Great guy, but it was funny. I said to him right away, I was like, "That's Witter." I didn't realize he did that for the boxing, but that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It was hilarious. I remember he goes, "I had cupping on my shoulders."
Look, yeah.
Yeah. He's like a real fighter.
He's legit, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What I found the funniest about that fight is you mentioned, like, you know, you're as a hockey fighter coming in. This guy, you know, like his nickname was Assassin King. If I think
yeah.
The Assassin King. I mean, what do you mean you're not ready to fight this guy? Right? You know, a nickname you should be.
Those brothers, there's two brothers, the Abel brothers, Zach Abel is who I fought, and those brothers, they're just massive fan favorites, guys. People love them, and I don't know how many fights they've won in the last handful that they've had, but the fans love them, and they're great promotion, so they're a lot of fun, and they're good guys too. So
yeah, cool.
That whole event is so fun, like even just to watch. I just watched the last one. It's like a comedy show with fights.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's, you know, and they have, like, near the end you get all the really good fights, and you get some ridiculous ones where guys have never been in a fight before, and like you get all levels all the way from top to bottom, and it's a really fun show. They're really a blast to be a part of.
Yeah, I've watched a few of them. They're caught. What, Bill Burr did one?
No, did he really?
Your boy, yeah. Oh. Bill Burr reached out to him about the mushroom space that Riley is in and all that. And he held one and. He's just funny. Just, he could say anything, just the way he delivers. It's pretty funny, sarcastic. But it was a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, we enjoy watching it. So that's good. We got one coming up. Maybe we can make the old Nasty Knuckles track.
Do you have a date on that?
That would be awesome. I can get it to you. I'll just have to double check. I just don't want to say the wrong date, but I want to say sometime around the 18th or 20th or something, but I'll confirm it for you and I'll send it to you as soon as I know. And, yeah, it should be really fun. My first show for Rough and Rowdy was in Providence, the one that we were just talking about.
Oh, cool.
And there was like 9,000 people there. It was it's where the Providence Bruins play.
The Dunkin' Donut Center or something.
It used to be called the Dunkin' Donut Center. It's something else now, but it was awesome. Great venue. Yeah. The place was packed, like huge following out there. So it should be really fun. And I think me and AJ will probably do something to get some of the Danbury fans up there. Cause it's, I think it's on a night. We don't have a game that night. So we might be able to get a pretty rowdy group up there.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Super cool, man. Well, we really, really appreciate you carving out the time, man. I know you're dropping your parents off at the airport. So, you know, much respect for carving out the time for us, and This has been awesome.
Yeah, great talk to you. I feel like I could keep going, man. I know you're busy. I could talk to you for a few hours just about everything. And but we appreciate your time, brother. And congratulations on your fourth kid.
Yes.
Not your first. Yeah. I apologize. But we really appreciate your time, man. And best of luck. Keep it going when you do get back in the lineup. But enjoy the boxing in the meantime.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. I really do. Thank you for having me on. I'm like super stoked to be connected with you guys. And yeah, definitely stay in touch. And if you guys are up in Danbury for games or whatever, definitely let me know, especially if it's in between now and February.
I want to sit in that suite. I want to sit in that suite where Jimmy, I'm on the bench and I see it. And I'm like, the whole time during the game, I'm like, fuck, that's where he was, you know, the elevator. Man.
Right on the glass.
Yeah, right there. It's awesome. But man, thanks super so much, cool. brother.
I appreciate you guys. Yeah, thank you again for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care, man. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, you too.
Big thank you to Daniel Amesbury. What a beauty.
Diamond hands.
Oh, man.
He's wild. He reminds me a little bit of you when you were coming up through the ranks there.
Yeah, I see
CHL.
That. Yeah, yeah. I've been kind of following him since the Ice Wars and, you know, him coming back to pro hockey and doing his
boxing,
thing.
And, like we talked about, but the guy likes to fight.
He likes to fight, yeah, man. I'm glad it's done for me.
No, I'm like
full war. It's
there aren't many people that really enjoy it.
No, not like that. No,
not like that. They admit it when they're done, though.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. But awesome him to join us and talk to us. He's all like I said to him. All the kids on our team there with the Rebels, they love him and call us Sonny Denuble Diamond Hands now. And he's the smallest guy on our team. So he plays like he's 6'2". Yeah, he honestly does. South Philly, my man. He's South Philly guy. Love Sonny. But you know what it's time for?
What's that?
It's time for the Clear Rum questions.
Ooh, let's go.
And it's brought to you by clearrum.com/shop. Go there, 35% off. Put in the code NASTY2023 and PA only, but get on it because it's delish.
Delicioso?
Yes.
Holidays around the corner.
It is, and I'm making some stuff up, and I'm going to post it. You'll see. Wait, do you see what I got? Berries, some fruit.
Oh,
it's almost
juice?
Like Phil Jungsy with the clear.
Oh, you like
but Sudsy's going to be in charge because we know.
We can't have that.
Well, we can if there are women.
Yeah.
If it's a big party. More you drink, the better I look. That's what I tell them.
It's pretty strong philosophy.
And when I shave that beard, you're going to be just as handsome as you are now, but more.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks.
You know what I mean? Debo said you got to shave it, by the way.
All right,
but let's get to the clear up questions. Baller, what do you got?
Matt Trey over on Instagram.
I know Matt.
He wants to know who pays for the equipment players use and how does it work with endorsements?
Actually, that's a good question, Matt. And it surprises me that you could come up with that. No, I'm kidding. He's a beauty. Actually, the players do not pay for their equipment in the National League.
They don't?
They do not. Even if you're an endorsed athlete, say Bauer, we know you had a little CCM deal. The players do get some stuff back from companies. Obviously, the bigger player, I want to say, you know, you get a little bit more. But the team's still responsible for everything, even if a player's endorsed. So the teams pay for everything, man. It's budget's pretty damn big. It's a lot bigger than when I started in 93-94 to where it is now. But the players don't pay for anything.
Yeah.
Unless it's something there's been times where a player will be like, can I get this? I'll just buy. I don't care and do it. But the team pays for everything. It's a good question.
Yeah. And the endorsement deals are obviously on a spectrum.
Yeah.
I wasn't on the same endorsement deal as Ovi.
Look, not as Ovi. No.
I was getting
a little less from CCM.
Just a little less. A lot of merch.
Yeah, a lot of merch.
A lot of money towards the old RBK store back in the day.
The RBK store. Well, look at these cooking tools. What were they for the grill? Oh, but they're made with a stick, with an RBK stick and the green gobsy.
Oh, yeah, the green gobsy.
Oh, Paul, you got to find that green goblin. I wish you had one left.
Probably do somewhere.
I hope you got to find it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the deals are different for every guy, and they've kind of gone down. It also depends on what market you're in, A, B, C market. But anyway, great question. But the players do not pay.
That's right.
Chicken Pig Hog over on Twitter. He would like to know your thoughts on the Flyers' new locker room, and what are your thoughts on the previous style compared to the new one?
Well, I think to keep up with the Joneses, everyone's kind of going into that oval room, and I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I think they did a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I was still there, we were working on it. We were doing the blueprints for it, and it was from what I saw, it was pretty similar, but I'm sure they you know, it was 3 years ago, so right. They probably made some changes to it. And Tricky Ricky there, the new head equipment guy with Tuna and the boys, they may have made some different changes from maybe what I had or I had in mind, but it looks great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's top notch. And like I said, every team's kind of, you kind of have to do it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not like college, but if you see these college rooms, I mean, they're nicer than a lot
insane,
of,
yeah.
Yeah, but you're recruiting, that's more of a thing for recruiting. But believe it or not, you know, Riles, like some, you know, you bring in a free agent guy to show him around, and you show him that practice facility is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Flyers did. And then now, this at the center, it's like a new building, and you know, it's nice to walk into something like that. So I think they did a great job with it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, hell of a job. I mean, the amount of detail
and
just thought put into it. I do like the oval. Guys don't get lost in the locker room. You can see kind of everybody, right?
That's
the corners
true.
Kind of guys, maybe guys get lost a little bit, but
and it sucks too. Like if people don't realize, when you have a square or a rectangle room, you end up, if you have a full room at some point, which we would do in the playoffs, you got guys kicking each other in a corner,
right?
Because you're but with an oval room, which is obviously the way to go now. It's you're never kicking anyone,
that's right?
So they did a great job. Out.
One final one from JR Weed 4 over on Instagram. If a player is traded, do they take their gear with them?
Well, so when I was still there, and most teams have two sets of gear. We would always send their shins, elbows, everything underneath. And if they did have black and white helmets, we would usually, you know, if the team did. But usually we kept the pants, gloves, helmets, unless a guy said, hey, Nas, can I take my game stuff? Because we would let them, but no one ever really asked to do that. So, no, they don't. Now, at the end of the year, say you're a free agent, yes, you take everything.
Yeah.
And I would always wait to see where that player would sign, and I would send their shin guard, shoulders, elbows, cup, you know, for their practice set. Because, like I said, every team, for the most part, has two sets of gear, unless, I know Detroit, I don't think they do, because they have a practice facility inside of theirs. The Devils used to. They don't anymore because they practice in the same building.
Yeah.
And I believe Columbus is another team that does that. And Edmonton as well, right? Edmonton has a practice site in that building. I may be wrong, but I thought they did. But anyway, if a guy was like, hey, I want to take my Flyer stuff, we usually would give it to him.
Yeah.
But most of the time, they didn't.
Hmm.
So, good question, OJR.
Yeah, good question. Yeah.
Sick fuck. I know him.
All right. Well, that's a wrap.
It's a wrap, boys.
Clear questions in the books.
Yes.
138 in the books.
Yes.
And until next week for 139, be sure to subscribe, comment, ask some questions, engage. Until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See ya.